Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yeah, it's diminishing returns now. It's like you can only indict them so many times, you know.
Right. I think that what took the longest is just to make sure who we had as the top of the food chain was the top of the food chain and nobody else.
And where was the top of the food chain at? Was that the folks in Florida or was that somewhere else?
The couple out of Florida.
So how big was this network by the time you got done? How many people are involved in this whole scheme?
I think 15 to 20 were indicted.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a decent size, but again, like the main orchestrators, probably five. There were probably five main orchestrators and everybody else was just like mopes that like helped along the way.
Yeah, just foot soldiers, you know, just doing the grunt work or some minor tasks, right?
I mean, the one kid, I mean, I'll never forget any of this crap. Guy's fucking screensaver was him naked. We were like, what the hell is wrong with you, dude?
Yeah. Say that again. What was that?
His screensaver, like when we get in his apartment, was him naked. Oh, and we were like, what in the hell is wrong with you, dude?
His skirt.
That's like something Morgan would do.
No, I don't. You can't prove it.
No, you couldn't make some of his stuff up. I remember when we go to arrest the Hasidic guy in New York, he wouldn't open his door. Like the guy refused to open his door. And we're banging and banging and banging. They call the cops on us. Cops come swooshing in, probably five or six cars. They're all Asian guys. And we're like, the hell's going on here? Like, we're cops. We're about to get arrested by a bunch of Asian cops. And we got a Jewish guy fucking yelling at us, won't let us in his house.
And then what happened?
Oh, once we badged the cops, they're like, oh, okay. Because to their credit, I mean, we don't wear uniforms, right? So they were like, we don't know who you are. They knew who we were, but they have a little bit of an argument there. So once the cops saw our stuff, they go, okay, do what you got to do. Then they opened the door. They knew it was either going to get hit or we were going to open it. So,
yeah. And that was the thing I was going to say, you're not kicking in the door because it's not a high risk entry, or at least it shouldn't be, right? I mean, you're just really there to arrest him, right?
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, yes. Cause I still never feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
You know, you never know what's going to happen, right? You don't want to sit in front of anybody's door for too long, but
no, not for too long, because then you become a target, you know?
Right. But with white collar guys, there was actually one guy in Florida, Key West, Florida. I remember we're going to arrest him, and the locals there were telling us, well, we call the people out of the house now from the street. And I'm like, are you crazy? Like, this guy lived like, I would call it 50 to 75 yards off the street. And like, yeah, we're going to call him out of the house. I'm like, no, we're not. Because if he has a gun, we're just going to be sitting there getting pegged. And I know it's a white collar thing, but I'm not sitting at the street calling anybody out of their house. There's no way.
And that was in Key West?
Yep. Oh. No, not Key West. I'm sorry. Palm Beach.
Really?
Did I say Key West?
Yeah.
No, it was Palm Beach.
Key West was another one of those undercover operations where if we had to go down there and see him at a bar, we think this guy's going to a bar.
No, I wish I got to Key West. I would love to see that place. I always wanted to get to Alaska. Alaska would be my bucket list. That's the one place I did not get to go while working for the government.
Oh, yeah. You need to listen to our interview with Rick Rambo, episode 123, man. You'll love it.
Mark Cameron.
Oh, my God.
Mark Cameron, the author. He wrote several of the novels for the Tom Clancy series. You know, he's a former, actually, U.S. Marshal.
Okay.
So he was down in Texas, ended up back in Alaska. We've had a couple guys up in Alaska. And for some reason, it's like these guys love it. They'll go to the U.S., they'll go places, but they love Alaska. So I can tell you what, you go to Alaska, dude, it's a dry cold.
Listen, I have no desire to live there. I just want to see it. I'm not like shooting a squirrel out of the tree and eating it for dinner. That's not how it's going to go. But
it's not a squirrel, dude. You're not going to survive on a squirrel. You got to take out a moose. You got to take out an elk. You know,
yeah, that'll last you. Yeah, that gets you through the winter. But I'm not.
Or one of those big ass.
I just want to see it. I just want to see it.
So let's put a bow around this because we want to talk about the OneCoin case. But by the time you get done, how much money do you think they had been able to illegally extract from these pump and dumps, these penny stocks?
I think the number used in court was around 25 million.
No, 25 million.
Yeah.
Damn.
How much went to the principal?
I would think that's conservative too.
Yeah. Well, because you're always going to be conservative in court because you want to be able to use a number you can prove.
100%. And I know for sure we didn't use all the stocks that we identified.
You know, what's your feeling? What if you were just taking a spitball guess at it, how much money do you think these guys were able to generate?
I would say more towards 25 to 50.
Okay. Jeez. And so we were talking earlier too, the guys in the port were kind of, you know, not overdoing it, but how, and the word is ostentatious, Murph. That means, you know, how excessive. That's word
there's another term called mean. There's another term called bite me, and you can probably figure out what that means, Ganser.
Yeah, well, that's bite me. So, how bad were the guys down the floor? How large were they living? You know, if they're living large, how large were they living down in Florida?
They were living pretty large. Both the two main people had houses right on the water. You know, probably 8-10 bedroom homes. Like, they're huge.
Jeez.
Yachts in the back. No, they were living like kings.
Well, so how were they justifying their income then on their income tax, Mr. IRS?
Again, they're money laundering cases. We don't look at tax when we're doing money laundering cases.
Okay.
No. I said one thing I love. Like, everybody thinks the IRS can just go pull tax returns and start looking at people's stuff. In criminal investigation, you cannot just look at tax returns. If you're not working a tax case, you can't look at that stuff.
Well, the reason I'm asking is, did they not file any charges then for tax evasion or falsifying tax returns or anything like that? Or was this just a straight money laundering?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, I have very little exposure to tax cases.
So it took you, like I said, a couple years to do the case, a year to take it to trial. How long did it take to get, how many defendants did you guys end up indicting?
Like I said, I think it was 12 to 15 people. Like total, were indicted. Two went to trial. Only two went to trial.
So everybody else took a deal then, obviously. Yep. And the two that went to trial, tell us about their experience.
As far as I felt bad for the wife, because I truly believe that she was just listening to whatever the husband said to do. At the end of the day, I don't think he even treated her that well, but they were arrogant. Like, the husband was definitely arrogant. Like, he thought money would get him through it. He had the best attorney around. Jerry Chargell was his attorney.
Well, weren't you able to seize money in bank accounts as, you know, illegal, you know, proceeds, you know, ill-gotten gains?
Yeah. No, I think we seized the house. I don't know how much money we ended up seizing. Obviously, they spend it as quick as they make it. So the assets are more. I know we got his house. I know we got a boat. But I don't think there was a ton in accounts. I mean, he spent a ton on trying to produce the movie.
Yeah.
He spent a ton on that.
And that's the ego. You know, people think, you know, they want to produce. I'm a producer on this. I mean, there's been a couple other cases, criminal cases, where the guys, you know, I'm going to be a Hollywood producer. I'm going to produce a record. Uh-huh.
And that's true of people with money. You know, I think we see that with Hunter Biden. He thinks his money is going to get him out of everything. But I just saw an advertisement, a teaser reel for a show that's coming out. This lady's supposed to be a billionaire, and in her phone conversation, she says, "What good is it being a billionaire if I can't have someone killed?" They just think they're above the law because they have money.
You know, $1 billion doesn't get you what it used to anymore, man.
I know.
So on the trial there, they both went to trial. Obviously, you testified in that, right?
Yep.
How did it go for him?
Didn't end well. I think he got 7 or 8 and she got 5.
Okay.
Pretty sure. Which, again, white collar crime, it doesn't, I mean, a lot of people bought that stuff, man. Like, to me, it should have been more, but white collar criminals don't tend to go to jail that long.
Yeah. You're taking people's money on fraud, and some people, you know, they see it, you know, I'd say a get-rich scheme, but basically that's what it is for certain people. But these investors think that they might get on the ground level, and then they lose everything they got.
And the greed gets to them, man. Greed.
Yeah.
Well, the people getting involved in this, it's not the same class of people, right, that are getting involved with a Bernie Madoff or something like that. Those people not that it's any better, they can afford to lose the money, but people invest in penny stocks, they can't afford to lose the money. They can't. And I think that's the part that's probably overlooked when these guys get sentenced.
It's some of these people thinking it's the kind of their version of playing the lottery. Well, hey, this is my chance to score big. I'm gonna make a bunch of money and then I'm gonna retire. And the other thing too is it sounds too good to be true, and that's the usual caveat, right? If it sounds too good to be true, it usually is.
There's the clue.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, I mean, that's a lot. I've even seen a lot, you know, just prior to retiring with crypto. I mean, everybody's looking at some different crypto project, trying to look, get rich quick and move on.
Yeah. Samuel Bankman-Fried. Why is it all bad guys have like three names, like, you know, John Wilkes Booth? And
that's why I go by Murph.
You can't convict me of anything. I got one name. It's Murph.
That's it. Hey, Rich, before we move on to the OneCoin case, did you ever hear of a financial advisor in Fort Lauderdale named Wayne McLeod?
No.
Or he might have been Jacksonville. He's in Florida, but he was going around. He was touting everything he could do with everybody's monies. He did it to a lot of DEA folks, a lot of AUSAs, supposedly some judges. So, but that didn't ring a bell with you?
No.
Yeah, because it turns out it was just a scheme to line his pockets. And you know, the sad part is he ended up committing suicide and left his wife and children destitute.
I feel bad for the wife and children.
Absolutely. they were living the life. They were living on the Intercoastal, and they had the yachts and the planes and all that stuff, you know.
Well, that penny stock case, I passed off one guy to a guy from IRS. And it's funny, when you pass off a case, everybody's like, yeah, okay, it's good to get a good case, right?
Yeah.
I told him before I did that, I had to go, I don't pass off shit, man. This is a good case. Trust me. I remember going to arrest that guy. I mean, this guy was sponsoring F1 races, like
wow.
F1 events, not the whole race, but yeah. Buying spots on a car, house right on the water, all glass back. We knock this guy's door and his wife comes out. Now, usually when the SWAT team's there, right, they'll knock the door and they'll be like, okay, see you guys later. We're going to eat. These guys were like, we're not leaving. This woman was so beautiful. I'd never seen a SWAT team freeze in their tracks. But
you know what it sounds like? Sounds like the Magluta brothers, Murph, you know?
Yeah, it does.
Down in, you know, they live beyond their means, and they make it very visible, you know, buying stuff, doing stuff.
Flashing it. Yep.
Yeah, if you got to stay below the radar, man.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well,
it's very hard for these people to do.
You tell people, hey, do you keep a secret? You just don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
It's okay. You can tell Murph in a day. He forgets it. So
that's pretty true.
Every joke is new with Murph. That's what I've done.
Sam, what the hell is your name anyway?
Rich. His name is Rich. So let's talk about OneCoin. Let's start setting the context for this. And so give us a little bit of background, because everybody's heard a lot about crypto. They've heard about Bitcoin. I mean, the Samuel Bankman-Fried, all of these different things that are going on. But give us some context. So start talking about what started coming up on your radar. And first of all, what is OneCoin?
Well, OneCoin, at the end of the day, turns out to be the biggest international Ponzi scheme ever. In 2015, I was still at DEA. Crypto had just become like the buzzword. Bitcoin, actually not even crypto, Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. That was about the time of the whole Silk Road thing. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we need somebody to do crypto. I always had a reputation for finding like my own cases. I never like needed the U.S. Attorney's office or anything like that. I would sit in my DEA group and develop cases that way, or I would go through like different databases that we have to find leads. So like, you're a crypto guy. Okay, I'm the crypto guy.
What did you know about crypto at that point?
Absolutely nothing.
See, that makes you the expert, because you raised your hand. You go, I'll do it. So now you're the crypto expert.
I mean, I knew different training companies like Chainalysis was out there at the time. We knew to get them involved. We had them give us some training. Other than Silk Road, I don't think anybody knew much at all. You knew Bitcoin was going through the roof at the time. Like Bitcoin was increasing heavily at the time. That's where you heard the story about if you were that pizza guy that sold the pizza for Bitcoin and he's now a millionaire. So that was basically all anybody knew. Nobody knew about blockchain, how to trace the blockchain or anything like that. I was literally that maybe first or second weekend that I was assigned to that position. I had a covert phone. I subscribe to every bullshit site that mentioned cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And I got a junk email offering me to buy this OneCoin thing. You know, did some open source stuff. I'm like, this just doesn't fucking sound right. I go in the morning, the office Monday morning, and I just start running it through databases. And I'm finding victims all over the US they don't know they're victims yet. The banks are filing reports only because it's cryptocurrency and nobody knows what this stuff is.
Hey, so, and but one coin too, it's got to be registered. It's got to be operated somewhere. So where did you find it? Where was this thing operated out of? Where was it registered?
So at the time, I'm thinking it's a U.S.-based thing. I have no clue.
Okay.
I just know it was coming out of a U.S.-based IP address. That's because that's about all I could say on that one because there's stuff still there. But it was coming out of a U.S.-based IP address. I had no reason to believe it was overseas at this point.
Okay.
The guy that I worked the penny stock case with, the AUSA, I go to his office. He gets transferred. He's like, I'll introduce you to somebody. You can tell him what you got. I go to the guy. I'm like, here's what I got. I got this thing called OneCoin. There's reports filed all over the place that people are investing in this stuff. Can you cut me some legal service so I can see what the hell's going on? And they literally looked at me like I had four heads. And they, at the end of the conversation, they were just like, okay, whatever you want, if you get anything out of it. And they just gave me some subpoenas and I just started following the money from there. Did that for about 6, 7, 8 months. Go back to the attorney's office. And at that point, I'm myself over almost at $1 billion in money movements.
Wow. How much?
$1 billion.
Billion with a B. That's Dr. Evil, right? We're going to hold the world ransom for $1 billion.
So the AUSA that's assigned to the case is like, hey, you know, there's another guy here, another investigator. So in New York, U.S. Attorney's Office has their own investigators.
Mm-hmm.
They had a kid looking at a guy that was related to my guy. And they were like, I think you guys might have a related case. At the end of the day, it turns out we had the same exact case. And this kid was definitely one of the smartest guys I've ever worked with. And he was just like, let me do all the financial stuff. I'll take it from here. I'll get you all the foreign accounts. I'll get you all the MLAT served and everything. I'm like, oh, great. I'll stay on the case. So he went off and started getting all the foreign bank account stuff. There was stuff in Dubai. There was stuff in the Cayman Islands. It was everywhere. So while he did that, I spent my time trying to learn what the hell OneCoin was. So we set it up operation where we went and bought OneCoin.
And real quick, we always define terms. So you use the word MLAT. Murph and I know what that means, but tell everybody what an MLAT is and why that's so important when you're doing international investigations.
An MLAT is like a mutual agreement with a foreign country to get records. Don't get me wrong. By the time you get the records, it's too late anyway. Like it takes forever. But it's just basically a request to a foreign entity to get records that they have related to a particular crime.
Yeah, it's like a mutual legal assistance treaty. So it's something where they're supposed to cooperate and collaborate with you. But like you say, by the time the frickin' bureaucracy and red tape gets involved, it's almost ancient history.
Yep. So, but again, to have somebody that's going to take all that burden off your back is a lifesaver. So anyway, did an undercover where we bought this OneCoin thing, and it was like a comedy skit. The sad thing in the U.S. part, it was all church-going people buying it. But anyway, I get involved. I call on Facebook. I find a guy. I reach out to him. I'm like, hey, this sounds pretty interesting. How do I get involved? He's like, all right, come on this phone call tonight. You know, it'll be a whole explanation of what goes on. So I listen to some guy give his bullshit about you buy this coin. There's different levels you buy. $1,000, $500,000, $1,500, $5,000. And then like the $10,000 at that time was the big one. And depending on how big a package you bought, you got these one coins as a reward. So the higher the package, the more rewards you get. And then there was like some stupid training package attached to it.
This starting to sound like Amway. Like if you get three people and they get three,
it's definitely a multi-level marketing scheme.
It's a Ponzi. Yeah.
So next day I call the guy. I'm like, yep, I'm in. I want to buy. And he's like, all right, let me get you some bank information and then I'll call you back. So he calls back. I said, I'll buy $5,000. Sorry, here's a great thing, man. You get to spin the wheel of fortune. And I'm like, well, what is that? So it's some wheel that has 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times your money on it. I'm like, so what do I do? He's like, once you get your account set up, there's going to be a button there to push. Just push the button. It'll spin the wheel. I push the button, spin the wheel. It says 5 times. I'm like, hey, bro, does that mean I won 5 times my money? He's like, bro, you're fucking rich, man. You got 5 times the coins, not your money. So he's like telling me I have like 100,000 of these one coins, which are worth X amount of dollars at the time. And I'm like, this just makes no freaking sense.
Well, so if you wanted to cash those coins in right then, I mean, that's the whole purpose of that's the whole thing behind a Ponzi scheme, right? There's not enough money to pay off everybody.
And they would not let you pay out. They would, we recommend you hold it. You hold it. You got to hold it for a little while. You got to let it go. Because if you start selling now, then the rest of the people are going to bail and it's going to lose value.
But what could you use? So you've got 100,000 one coins. What can you use a one coin for?
Nothing. It was absolute fake money. Like they said they were going to set up a shop where you can go online and use your one coins to buy stuff. That never came to fruition. And the price was not tied to anything. Like literally this woman who set this up, Ruja, had events where she would just increase the price. So like, there was a big event in London. You could look it up online. She literally announces that the price is going to double at this event. Your one coins are now worth double, two times your coins. Everybody's cheering. It's like, it's unreal. It's unreal.
Did everybody walk in, you know, I'm sorry to say this about the victims, but did they have a big L tattoo on the front of their heads for losers?
Again, it goes back to that get rich quick thing, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, the U.S. people, they were all part of the church. Like they're listening to people that they see every Sunday.
Oh.
So they're not thinking they're going to get screwed over.
We're going to talk about Ruja here in a little bit too, because she's quite infamous now. If you want to know how big this case is, we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. But real quickly though, interesting, kind of dive behind the curtains. I know you don't give away the secret sauce, but when you set up to do UC stuff, like you're going to buy from them and you're on Facebook and you're making calls, I mean, you kind of have to set it up so that you're backstopped in a certain way, because you don't want people discovering, oh, I just traced your IP address. It goes back to the IRS in New Jersey, you know? So, I mean, with Alex, I'm giving away the secret sauce, but how much work does it take to set up so that you can run undercover like that, especially since you're going to be online? And look, everybody's, every site has a return address. It's an IP address. So how long does it take for you to set up so that you can confidently operate and not be discovered as being a Fed?
It's not that hard at all. I mean, it's not a secret sauce. Everybody knows you can use a VPN to mask your location. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of money on getting the right equipment, the right computers. You know, the IRS, I would say, is unusually leading the charge for a change as when it comes to cryptocurrencies and digital assets.
Mm-hmm.
And they never shied away from spending money on getting you the right equipment, the right tools, the right training. So we had everything set up that we needed. And if we needed to mask identities, to get identities, we were set up to go.
Well, because, you know, in traditional banking, especially after 9/11, you got to do the KYC, know your customer. There's certain things that you have to do to be able to engage in transactions. Was there anything like that with OneCoin, or were they just like, we'll take your money. We don't care who you are.
100%. They just took your money.
Okay.
It didn't matter who you were. I know there was a point where they knew U.S. authorities were sniffing around. And
that was exactly my point. At some point, they have to know that somebody's onto them at a certain point.
Right. And then they set up alternate payment methods. It's kind of like a check, like a money service provider. Mm-hmm. So you would pay your payment to a guy who set up a fake company.
Okay.
And then he was taking a fee to process the payments. So I would mail my payment to Baloney Corporation instead of OneCoin. There was a period of time where people were actually sending it to OneCoin named accounts. Then she had people all over the place opening accounts for her payment services, and then they would get a fee for processing the money.
Why did she think that was going to insulate her from liability?
I think she was smart enough. She knew at some point she cut it off. She was like, no, I'm not messing with the U.S. But overseas, she had accounts everywhere. I mean, she accounts everywhere, different names. Her boyfriend bought a bank.
If you want to make something happen, just go buy a bank and then run everything through your own bank.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the amount of money, I mean, she had insiders in the government, insiders in the bank. I mean, the woman was good. Obviously, she's good because she's still not been found. So
I'm reading here a DOJ press release. In 2013, they're referring to OneCoins, increased their value 75 times in 1 year in 2013.
No, that's probably Bitcoin.
That's Bitcoin.
It shot through the roof. Yeah, it went from like worth a couple hundred dollars up to thousands. Like six, I think at that time it was like $6,000 or $8,000.
Holy cow!
And you know who had bought $250 worth of Bitcoin and sold it?
You. Yours truly?
Me.
Yeah. Did you lose money?
No, I got my money back. It was one of the things, like, I just didn't want to mess with it. Now that $250 would have been worth just an excessive amount. But I did that. I did.
He froze on your end?
What's that?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it didn't freeze on our end. That was just you just having a, just, you know, you froze up. I mean, I think.
It was just you. It was just the center picture.
No, it wasn't me. It was you.
What's Don't blame this shit on me this time.
Yeah, no, it's you. It's the freaking IRS VPN that you're coming in over, pal.
They heard you selling that Bitcoin. They were like, where to go?
I'm so close to the NSA and all these other guys. I'm sure all of my conversations are being monitored. So, I had $250 and I just sold it to get rid of it. But now, as you know, the guy who does my taxes, you have to disclose if you have any holdings in crypto assets, you know, any crypto coin. And so, you know, there's Ethereum. I had some Ethereum and I had crypto at one time. But it's like, here's the thing. Let's get into this world. But, there are some people I see out now that are going, hey, I'm going to teach you how to do crypto investing. And they say, one guy on Facebook that I happen to know used to be a neighbor. I don't want to use names, but here's what I made, you know, already this year. I've made $670,000. Then they do these things of, hey, these people made $150,000 and they've just retired all their debt. When you see stuff like that, does it send red flags up for you too?
100. Well, I mean, now I'm working for a crypto tracing company. So not as much, but when I was on the job, I up until the last day, which was, you know, a week ago, I subscribed to every person on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram that was promoting anything stupid like that. And they're all over the place. They're all over the place. I don't think they're as successful now as they were then, which is the main driver why the OneCoin thing was so successful. Like you said, you had $250 and it shot up to $6,000. She was promoting this thing during that time saying she was going to be the next Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like she was the Bitcoin killer. So I think that's why she was able to have so much success.
I tell you what,
if you tried it today, I people would be wise to it. At least most people would be wise to it. There'd still be somebody.
Yeah. Well, and again, like P.T. Barnum said, there's a sucker born every minute, man. There's somebody out there who doesn't take the time to do their due diligence, and then they start investing in this stuff. I'm very leery anytime I see somebody go, here's how much money I made and here's how much you can make. Because number one, I said, I don't believe that shit. What I want to see is the 1099. You show me, you know, the authenticated tax returns with the 1099, then I might believe you. But don't give me something that could have been photoshopped or generated and put it on the internet and tell me, hey, this is legit.
If anybody ever promises you're going to make a guaranteed rate of return, you should probably turn the other way.
Yeah. Run.
Well, here's one thing I guarantee. No, yeah. So talk about that. So now keep going from that. So this thing starts to get bigger and bigger. So how it starts off with you. But at what point do you start going, man, this is big. I mean, you got to get more people involved.
Oh, I knew it was big when I met with the agent from the U.S. Attorney's Office and we combined our information. We knew at that point it was like a holy shit moment. And it's funny because I remember early on in my DEA career, I'm working a case with a guy and it was a complex drug money laundering case. It was actually the first case and probably the only case in New Jersey where we ever prosecuted somebody for narcotics money laundering with never doing a drug purchase. And I remember him saying, this is going to be your career case. You get like one of these a career. And he, for the most part, he's probably right. Right. You don't get many, like that case involved, like some big time drug dealers, a lot of casino activity. Like we were going down to Atlantic City and just recreating gambling activity. So it was pretty cool. And I probably that also spun off into a mortgage fraud case. So it was a big case. And I probably thought at that time this is pretty cool. When I hit this OneCoin thing, and like I said, when that guy and I married our information, we were like, holy shit. And it just kept going. So at that point we had the undercover done.
You said you started this in 2015?
Like late 2015.
Okay.
Mid 2015, somewhere around there. So it is one of the few examples where you see the government catching on quickly. Cause she only started promoting like the back half of 2014. It was like when they started getting this thing in motion. And I would say mid 2015 is when I started seeing it. And again, like Treasury's credit, they saw the cryptocurrency area early on becoming ripe for fraud, and they were right on top of it. So after we married our information, we were digging and digging, getting bank records, doing the undercover, trying to figure out what the hell the blockchain is at that time. Because now you have to prove, like she's saying, it's got its own blockchain and everything. So we're like, what the hell is the blockchain? We're trying to figure that whole part out. Nobody knew what that meant. And that was a significant part of it, is trying to prove that it was not on the real blockchain. But nobody understood what it was. So trying to explain it to the attorneys and everything, they're like, what the fuck's the blockchain?
See, and you hit a very big point right there. It's one thing when you start getting new kind of novel cases and novel crimes like Bitcoin or something else. It's not enough just for you guys to know about it. You got to spend time educating the judges or the people. Yep. You can't get a warrant. I remember I was the first guy in Kansas to get a warrant to search an internet service provider for an IP address. Mm-hmm. I had to spend an hour educating the judge on what it is, what it meant, you know, why this was. Whereas now you get judges, now it's commonplace, right? But to your point, I mean, how much education did you have to do of the judges and even some of the other attorneys to get them to understand what this is and why we need this piece of paper?
I would say that probably took the longest part of this case. Well, I mean, it was complicated to begin with, but overcoming that hurdle of trying to explain what the blockchain was, trying to find someone who's qualified to say, yeah, this isn't on the blockchain, because none of us were. Everything was new at that point. So that took a lot of time finding somebody.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Who was the person or firm, or who did you find that was the expert?
Eventually, we found some guy overseas who was saying that it wasn't on the blockchain and explained it all. And I don't know that it ever definitively came down to, this is what the blockchain looks like, and you can't find these transactions. You know, like today I know, like, you can go to the Bitcoin blockchain, you'll find Bitcoin transactions. You go to EtherScan, you'll find Ethereum-based transactions. There's definitely no one coin blockchain where you can go search transactions.
It's funny you mentioned that, because you were mentioning chain analysis. And I know I do a briefing on the Cold War with Russia. And one of the things people don't understand, you can trace this stuff. 74% of all ransomware payments that are made with Bitcoin go back to one country. Do you know which country that is?
Russia. Or North Korea. Who wanted to?
Russia. 74% of all ransomware payments paid through Bitcoin go back to Russia. There's your fact for the day. You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
but continue on, comrade, in our discussion. So you start getting these explained. What kind of things are you needing to get that you need to explain to judges? Search warrants. You know what? Are you running any title? Are you able to run any Title IIIs at this point?
I don't. No, we didn't run any Title IIIs. Everything was financial records, and then, oddly enough, out of nowhere, so we all have our own internal case management systems, and an agent from Miami calls me and says, hey, I got somebody that wants to talk to you about this guy you're looking at. And I'm like, well, who the hell is he? And long story short, at the end of the day, this was a guy that knew the main target in the U.S. that I was looking at, not Ruja, but the main target in the U.S. that we were interested in. And we're like, holy shit. And he's like, yeah, he's willing to do whatever he has to. And at that point, the IRS moves very slow when it comes to consensual monitoring and stuff like that. So we had to get the FBI involved. So we asked AUSA, like, do you know an FBI guy that you like? So yeah, I got a great guy. He'll help you guys out. And sure enough, we get introduced to this guy. And he's like, yeah, I'll get somebody down there to go down there and get the kid set up. That kid went in, hit the home run, and it was on from there. Then it was just a constant go, 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 go.
Who was the guy you were looking at? Can you say?
Yeah, he's Armenta, Gilbert Armenta. He's been sentenced and everything. So,
what was his sentence?
He was her boyfriend. 5-7 years.
Damn, that's just again, not enough.
Not nearly enough. I mean, he had, I guess you could sympathize with him a little bit. He was, you know, he was sitting in MDC during that whole COVID thing, which MDC is not nice to begin with. During COVID and the whole Epstein thing, it wasn't even nicer. So I still think he should have probably got more, but I'm not, that's beyond our pay scale, right?
Yeah, we do our job and the court screw everything up. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that, but
yeah, that, and that guy lived happens. Like, that guy lived like a king. He was her boyfriend, so.
So now,
so good.
I was just going to ask about Ruja's partner, Carl Greenwood. Was he a boyfriend?
I'm sure you saw he recently. So he was the public face, right? He was the salesman. He was the entertainer. He was the one that went out in the public and convinced people if somebody needed like help coercing somebody, they call him.
What coercing him as far as he's a slick talker or he was strong arm?
Yeah. The guy is a great talker. That's why he's in the MLM world, right? I mean, that's what it takes is coercing people.
Yeah.
When we got him over in Thailand, that was an interesting experience, to say the least. That was a lot of fun. Thailand's an interesting place.
Yeah, we had we've got some other cases that have intersected with Thailand. Wasn't that where Victor Boot was arrested?
Yep. Absolutely.
So we spent some time in Bangkok, which that in and of itself is an interesting experience. But we ended up going out to Koh Samui, Thailand, and I have not well traveled internationally. That place was so beautiful. If I was there another week, I probably would never came home. It was so nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right on the water, blue water, cheap. Just it was nice.
Was Greenwood surprised when you guys showed up?
Oh yeah. He was not expecting it. He had a gorgeous house overseeing the water, all glass back. And it's funny because the Thai police at that time, like, they don't have their own cars. I think they bought their own guns. And they're bringing us out there. We can't do much, right? We just got to sit there and watch them go. And again, this is in 2016, 17. We get to the front of the house and they send up a drone to fly around the house and go look in the back door. I'm like, Jesus Christ, these guys are more high tech than we are. You know, at that point, I mean, now that's commonplace, but then they had that thing up and they were like, okay, it's safe to go. Let's go. So it was interesting. And then grab him. It's funny. You're bringing him to get locked up and tell his wife to get him some clothes. She comes out with all white clothes and the Thai police just shaking their head. Like it's going to be brown by tomorrow morning.
Why does everybody want to wear white suits? It's like a James Bond movie, you know, Goldfinger, you know, you expect me to talk Goldfinger? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
But the house was off the charts nice. Definitely the nicest place I've ever seen.
Wow. So what was the, was the reason you went to Thailand is because you didn't expect that guy to be able to get him in a country or any other country or even back to the U.S. to where you could just, you know, put the habeas gravis on him or what?
100%. Everybody, so the jig was up at this point. So at some point, this is definitely obviously stuff you can't talk about here, but we're talking, we're here in Ruja, and we know, like, she has people in high places to the point where, like, she was getting information about international coordination meetings that we were having. She was getting very specific information. We were like, holy shit.
Wow. You got a snitch inside the group somewhere.
She was hiring spies to look at other people. And we were like, this woman's better than most drug traffickers that you see. But she at some point got wind that something was going on. That's when she disappears. Like she knew the jig was up on a conversation and she just literally dropped the phone. I mean, this woman talked on encrypted phones. She did not talk in public phones. And when she got wind, not even knew, she just got a sniff. Gone, hung up the phone and just left. That's the day she left to never be seen again. So he knew as well that something was up and he wasn't going to move from where he was. He was not going to come to the U.S. Actually, none of them were going to the U.S. anyway.
They were smart enough to know that if there's any sniffing around at all, you land in the U.S., it's game over.
Right.
And she's Bulgarian, right?
Yep.
So why did this guy pick Thailand? Was it simply because it was beautiful and a place to go, or was there some other reason that they're operating out of places like that?
That's a good question. I don't think I ever even asked him why he picked Thailand. I mean, again, going back, if I were stealing money from everybody and their mother and I wanted to like maintain a low profile, I would probably go there too. Like nobody's, you're not raising red flags over there, right? I mean, everybody's pretty modest. And there's, you know, a couple people with money that live in nice houses, and then everybody else lives modestly. So I think he felt safe living there in that environment. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool. I mean, it was pretty cool because like they had some Americanized areas. Like I can go to Starbucks over there. I can get McDonald's. It didn't taste the same, but I can go get McDonald's and stuff over there. So
it's made with yak instead of cows. You know.
It didn't taste the same. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Hey, but let me ask you this though. I don't know if you were able to get into this with there or just, I'm thinking just from an immigration standpoint. So like, I know I got a buddy of mine from Canada, retired from the OPP. Mac, if you're listening out there, hey, he retired from OPP. So him and his wife, they bought a place down in St. Petersburg Beach. So they go down 6 months down there, but you know, because of immigration, getting a visa stuff, they can only be down there 6 months. Then they have to go back. How is it that some of these folks are able to operate? Was it just Thailand allowed you to stay there without having to, you know, leave and come back or go somewhere else for residency? Because I'm always interested why you pick certain places. A lot of it is extradition. Some of it is, hey, I can get a visa and I can be here for 10 years and I don't have to leave.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the immigration rules over there, but although I do think he was a citizen of both. I mean, I know he's from Sweden, but I think he was a citizen of both.
Yeah, it's great if you can get dual citizenship then.
Because unfortunately, the Asian population was a huge victim of the whole thing. I mean, at the end of the day, it turns out to be like a $4.5 billion scheme. I would say Asia was a good part of that.
Bridge Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm just pulling up a little synopsis of the case here. You know, in February 2015, Bulgaria issues a warning. In 2016, the British newspaper Daily writes about it. They're on the observation list of a lot of authorities, including Bulgaria, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Latvia. Many of these countries report on it. Then Norway reports on it. And then the Italian antitrust reports on it, and then the Hungarian Central Bank reports on it. Then the Indian police, they arrest 18 people in Navi Mumbai for organizing a OneCoin recruitment event. I mean, we're recruiting people to buy OneCoin. And then, oh my God, I mean, it just goes on and on. You've got that, you've got Germany, you've got Thailand, you've got Belize. I mean, Vietnam, in fact, I saw one of the things, right? They said, no, we're licensed by Vietnam, only to come to find out they forged the Vietnamese certificate. I mean, what I don't want to say, you have to hand it to them, but it's like anybody who can get $4.5 billion, you wonder, why didn't you just create a real company and make money?
I don't think this works if Bitcoin wasn't going so high at the time and the craze around it and the unfamiliarity, right? Nobody knew about it. So it's somewhat believable, right? You could see that Bitcoin was going up. So why not believe this?
Well,
it was interesting. It was interesting.
Well, for Ruja Ignatova from Bulgaria, she has now got the distinction of being on the FBI top 10 list.
Yes.
So I have to ask you, though, you know, they're saying something about maybe she went through plastic surgery and stuff. Do you think she's still alive?
That's the million-dollar question, or at least the $500,000 one. I think that's a double-edged sword, right? When you have that much money and it's liquid, you could hide forever, right? We all know that. But also, when you have that much money, especially some of the places where she goes to, and there's a good chance somebody's going to cut you out, right? Because they know what you have.
You'd think so.
I think if somebody got access to, or had somebody who had access to her wealth, I can't imagine them letting her live. But she has enough money to look like a whole different person right now, and we would never know.
You know, and reading the press release from DOJ, there were at least 3.5 million victims because of this scheme. So she's got a lot of enemies around the world.
Yeah, but unfortunately, again, that goes back to the penny stock stuff, right? Mm-hmm. These are people that they're not like Bernie Madoff victims, right? And I think even the judge said this at trial or at sentencing for Greenwood. Like, you got it from people who can't afford to lose it, whereas people involved in bigger schemes like Madoff and just like, not that it makes it any better, but those people lose $100,000 and it's like, it sucks, but it doesn't end things for them. These people, a lot of them are third world country, from third world countries, you know, they lose a couple thousand dollars. That's a game changer.
That's a year's income or 2 years income, right, in some, right, of these places. Yeah.
Right. And then even some of the, you know, the victims in the US who are church people, these weren't wealthy people by no means. So they're not going to be bankrupt, but it definitely hurts.
So, well, it's what just was like scamming the elderly and other stuff, man. These are
what was Greenwood's sentence?
20 years.
Well, that's more.
So that was a good one.
And I saw he was ordered to pay $300 million.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of hard to do on the NDC salary, but or the federal prison salary. But
well, it depends on, you know, and, you know, obviously they're going to go after and try and seize assets and stuff. But see, that's another thing that too. Talk about that for a second, you know, as we wind this down. But these assets are spread out all over the place, right? So how do you go about seizing these assets? Who gets to seize them? Who gets to keep them? Because like the house in Thailand, that's got to stay with the Thai folks.
Yeah, 100%. We don't see that. They, you know, they took care of that. Whatever was seized in the UK, I'm sure they take care of that. We did get seizures here on the US based people. So like her boyfriend, he had a significant amount of assets, and we actually got a significant amount of those.
Well, wasn't she involved with her brother too, Constantine?
Yeah. Yep.
And what was his what's happened with him?
I think he's still waiting for I think he's still waiting to be sentenced.
Okay.
So I'm not going to talk much about that one, but I'm pretty sure he hasn't been sentenced yet.
Wow. But you know, to make the top 10 though, I mean, it's like normally the rewards for the top 10 are, you know, $20,000, $25,000. She has a $250,000 reward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, hey, you know, hey. But I'll tell you what, if you want to invest that, I've got something for you, Rich. Oh, that's going to double your money.
It's going to be a cryptocurrency?
I got a bridge down here in Florida.
Yeah, I got some swamp land. I got a gator out back. I'll make boots for you. Well, look, how long did this, from beginning to end, from the time that you started becoming the crypto expert and looking at OneCoin, how long did you work on this case?
I would say, all right, so 15. By government standards, pretty quickly. I would say by 2017 is when we had our first indictments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a case that started from scratch, like somebody didn't come into the U.S. Attorney's office and say, here's what I have, and this is what it is. It started from scratch. Yeah.
And what about the coordination with all the other countries? So as you're doing this, how many different law enforcement and investigative entities are you collaborating with and coordinating with around the world?
That is never easy, Murph. I'm sure you know that. It was a lot. It was Bulgarians, Dutch, Germans, British, Thai, and I'm probably missing one or two there. I mean, okay. Cayman Islands.
How did the other countries respond? I mean, were they aware of it, and you just now merged your cases, or were some of this new information to them?
I think everybody, like you said, you saw all the notices. Everybody was always aware of it. I don't think anybody ever had as much as we did. And there's always in law enforcement, right, that little competition. You know, people are holding stuff from you, and they don't want to give you everything they have, which is unfortunate because I thought from our side, we were always pretty open with the overseas authorities.
Yeah.
And there were times where we thought we would have the opportunity to get our hands on certain people. But it was like you're hedging your bet. Like if we do it, are they going to let them go or are they going to hold them? And then depending on what country that is, you know, you're like, what do we do? What's the right answer?
Who is the country you had the most fun working with?
Unfortunately, at the end, I'd have to go with the Thai because that's the only place I got to go to because I left. So after all the main people were indicted and, you know, in the legal system, I took a full-time undercover gig where I just went off the radar for a while. So I never got, like, it's good they all went to the UK. I think they went over to Germany. I never got to take those trips.
So why'd they pull you off of that to do a UC gig?
That was voluntary. Like that was, it was an assignment that came up that I was interested in.
Did it involve buying anything off the back of a truck at a port in New Jersey or, you know?
No, it was all crypto. It's all cryptocurrency.
All crypto? Well, yep.
So what is, I don't know if you can talk about this, but what are you doing now? You're retired from the IRS, right?
I retired from the IRS. It'll be 2 weeks now. And I work for a company called Merkle Science, which is, they're like a chain analysis. They're a competitor in the crypto forensics area. They have a new tool, similar to chain analysis with some, you know, more unique features. So trying to help them get off the ground.
Very cool.
So it used to be, the belief was, and I remember something, I believe it was Purdue did with the FBI, I think it was. I can't move some university, but in other words, about breaking some of this anonymity of the blockchain, people thought, hey, or not the blockchain, but Tor, the Onion Routing Network, you know, and the dark web, and which is kind of combined when you talk about crypto and stuff. That's one of the reasons that enabled Silk Road. The only reason Silk Road was able to be successful was because of the introduction of Bitcoin. Had you not had a cryptocurrency to move that stuff around, yeah, wouldn't work. Just logistics. You want me to write a check with my real name and send it to you? I don't think I'm going to do that. Yeah. So, but
crypto's an interesting space. I could, like, it's funny because, you know, working traditional money laundering, right? If you work a black market peso case or even a traditional money laundering case, you could be considered the expert after a couple cases, right? The fact pattern's pretty much going to stay the same, just different players and different products. This crypto stuff, it changes so quickly. Like if you're working the OneCoin case for a year, by the time we're done with that, Bitcoin's pretty much out of flavor and everybody's moved over to Ethereum or Ethereum-based tokens. And you're like, okay, now I got to learn all this. And now they're using bridges and cross-chain swaps. And you're like, okay, now I got to learn this. It changes so quickly. You really can't be an expert. People say they're experts. I would argue tooth and nail that you might have been an expert, but now you got to learn this. Because it just changes and changes.
Have you ever thought about writing a book about all this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. OneCoin, definitely. I knew that was a unique experience. And there's still stuff. Like, obviously, we can't. There's, what, two more people that go through the legal process? When you can just openly talk about it, there's so much. I mean, there's just so much interesting stuff in that case. Again, a $4.5 billion fraud has got to be interesting. Jeez. But just like the cast of characters, it could be like a dramedy because it's serious, but some of the stuff that happened is just so unreal. You're just like, what the hell is going on here?
So let's make a prediction. You think Ruja will be found? You think, well, first of all, do you think she's alive? Let's do the odds. You think the odds are she's alive or she dead? And if she's alive, do you think she'll be found?
I don't think she'll be found. I'm 60-40 on dead or alive. It's so.
There's too much money involved. Money makes people do stupid things, and stupid money makes people do really stupid things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing I can think is if you got her early, where you could probably get access to everything she had. But if she's around for a while, that leaves me, I'm like, well, maybe she had more time to hide and change her identity. So you got that kind of money. I mean, you could change your whole look and nobody, I mean, you can get fat taken off you at that point.
Well,
yeah, lose 20 pounds and change your face, right? I mean, that's a lot of money.
Well, seriously, like she was fat taken off of you.
And then again, like, listen, like, depending on what country you're in, right? You could pay almost anybody, for safekeeping in a lot of places. So depends on where she ended up.
Yeah, like Russia. They would love to have her over in Russia. You have to think, though, you have to assume almost that because of her propensity for security, like you said, you're using don't talk on public phones, use secure phones, you know, having spies and everything. You almost think she had to have an exit plan. It's not like she just dropped the phone that day and she said, oh, I better do something. You almost think that she had to have a exit strategy already in place, that if this happened.
100%. The people she was associated with, 100%. That plan was in place well before.
Yeah.
The drop the mic moment, she knew what was happening from there and was gone. There's no doubt about it.
I'll tell you what, man.
That's what makes it so fascinating. Like, you don't think, like, a cartel, right? You think about it. That's like an organization. So you think it's pretty, this was like a woman and a guy who got all these people around them, but they weren't like an organization. They weren't organized.
They were a cult. You know what? It was the cult of one coin. But what they were able to do is turn this into a cultish like thing and get people to believe in something and spend your money.
If you can get a multi-level marketing scheme where you're selling out Wembley Stadium, you're doing something right, right?
I mean, really?
Yeah, yeah. If you look it up, I mean, they had an event at Wembley Stadium.
And see, just that alone lends the air of credibility. It's like, how else could we do this unless, you know, and sell out Wembley Stadium unless we were legitimate?
Yeah. Right, right. And it's funny because, like, she was on, like, she would post her face on Forbes and all this stuff. I'm like, fucking Forbes. Wow, that's, like, pretty legit. But then you look at it, it was not Forbes. It was, like, a foreign country's version of Forbes or, like, their edition. And it was a paid advertisement in the middle, not the cover.
Yeah. So it's it was spelled Forbes. It was a different. It was a knockoff. Back. It was a knockoff for me.
But it was. It was interesting. It was planned out well.
You know, this is. I know nothing about virtual coins and all this Bitcoin and all this stuff. And this has been a real education, Rich. It's. But even talking about the penny stock scams going on out there, holy cow! You just have no idea.
Oh, you get fast forward to now. Now you got all the elder scams with the crypto. That's a whole nother,
you know what,
area you could talk to for hours. I mean, we just came off a case with a woman in Florida who thought she was dating a guy overseas, but he couldn't talk to her because where he worked was underground. But he would send her checks, $60,000-$70,000 at a time, and tell her to go to Bitcoin ATM and send it to a Bitcoin address. You know, approaching that person and saying, like, what are you doing here? Oh, I'm doing it for my boyfriend. I don't think he's your boyfriend. Oh, yeah, he's my boyfriend. He's my boyfriend. You ever meet him? Well, he can't come over here. He's coming over here. And you're like, ma'am, I'm telling you, he's not your boyfriend. It took this woman three times we had to go down there. And the last time we had to rip her out of the car because she wouldn't stop talking to him.
Wow. You know, my wife and I, we made a Zelle payment to have fencing put in our yard. Mm-hmm. And the fence company is legit. But when we were talking, he said, listen, you got to pay half up front for materials and all that. And he said, you can swing by the office, you can mail us a check, or we can take a payment via Zelle. And when he said that, somebody got into his email account and now there's they hacked him, is what he did. And so we Zelled that money away and it's, you know, a couple $1,000.
So that's what happened with the example I was just giving you in Florida. That money was actually stolen from a cabinet company down there, like a small business. I mean, it was a lot. It was $900,000 at the end of the day.
Yeah, and ours was, compared to that, ours is just small. But I called the sheriff's department here, Orange County SO, and they got involved with the investigator, and it's now out in Vegas with the fraud investigators out there. Apparently, that's where the people are that hacked his email account. And you know what? The owner of the fence company, he was a stand-up guy. We split the loss, so he ate half of it. Yeah. We ate half of it. Yeah,
but so that's the next new area. Now it's,
well, look, if there's a way to scam people out of money, there's going to be somebody out there to figure it out and do it. And there's always a new twist. And to your point, when you're using crypto or stuff people don't understand, they're buying into the hype, and they don't know how to do their due diligence to understand. Like I said, I see these things being posted by people I know talking about, hey, I made this much money. One, like I said, the one guy said, I've made over $600,000 investing in crypto. And I'm going, yeah, I'm sorry.
How?
Well,
I mean, your timing's got to be very good because it's just so unstable. That's the problem. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to like invest in crypto, like try and trade like stocks, you better have money to lose because, you know,
never bet the milk money. And that's what most people do. They bet the milk money. Bill William Bennett, who was the Secretary of Education, remember him? He's on TV. He was out in Vegas, you know, spending a lot of money, and they tried to make a big deal out of it. Like you said, hey, look, I never bet the milk money. Yeah, was I spending a lot of money? Yeah. But yeah, like to your point, like Bernie Madoff stuff, some of these folks, it was just a rounding error for them.
Right.
But yeah, tell you what, Sam Bankman-Fried, let me ask you this. Let's close this out by asking this. I know that there's we regulate currency. I mean, you've got the Fed, you've got other places that regulate currency. You've got the European folks. Do you think we're going to get to the point where crypto is regulated the same way currency is? Do you think there'll be a Fed digital currency? Is that a good idea? What's your final thoughts?
Will there be a Fed? I don't think in the United States. I don't. They say they'll do it. I think there's a use for it. Or at least definitely blockchain technology, like keeping track of stuff that way. unless it's stable, I don't see anybody buying into it, because if it's going to move around, yeah, nobody's going to take that chance. Like, that's like, you know, if you sell your, buy a car today and pay Bitcoin, and give the dealer 50 grand. Tonight, Elon Musk says something stupid and Bitcoin drops $5,000-$10,000. There's all your profit and then some. So stable coins, I think, yeah. If it's just a straight up cryptocurrency that's not stable, I can't see anybody using that as a currency. It's just too risky. And then there's still security issues, I think, with crypto, which keeps companies like mine in business, right? There's always hacks. There's always thefts.
Oh, yeah. The North Koreans love to get into crypto exchanges because they have to at some point get hard currency to fund a lot of their stuff. And so they become the experts.
There's still some security gaps they have to close. And I would think the crypto world does not want any regulation, but I think you have to have some. Mm-hmm. It's a necessary evil, right? I mean, you can't just have people running around making their own rules.
And if they don't do it sooner rather than later, then they're going to get what they don't want, which is onerous government regulations that come in and destroy basically the whole market. You know, that's what happened with talking about, you know, the Bernie Madoffs of the world, but that's what happened out here in Loudoun County with Bernie Ebers and MCI WorldCom and the Rigas with Adelphia, all these CEOs who were misstating their financials, their 10Ks. And so you start off with litigation, then you go to regulation, then you go to legislation. So now we have Sarbanes-Oxley. And those are onerous regulations, but name the last time, you know, you've seen this too, Rich. Name the last time you've seen a CEO of a publicly traded company perp walk for misstating their 10Ks. been a long time. People know you're going to go to jail if you do this stuff.
Right. But again, that's a double-edged sword for the crypto world, because they want decentralization. That's the whole point of it. So you got to find, there's got to be a happy medium somewhere. And I think until they find that, I don't think crypto is just going to be widely accepted to the masses.
One of the draws about doing crypto and like Bitcoin too is, like, if you do a regular transaction with currency, you know, out of the US, it could take 5 to 7 days to clear, because it's got to go through international, it's got to do all this stuff. But Bitcoin reconciles itself basically every 15 minutes. You do an exchange, you do a trade, it hits the blockchain register, it's an immutable ledger, it's written to that, you know, and then 15 minutes later it reconciles, and then it's like you've got money moving around in minutes as opposed to days.
Right. And that's the attraction. But again, during that time, if something stupid happens or somebody says something stupid, within that 10-minute window, you could lose a couple hundred bucks or $1,000. So
if the volatility is what makes it, that's where so much risk comes from. And it's the outside influences that can affect the volatility. It's not like, it's going to take a lot to make the dollar go up and down. You can kind of predict those things. But like to your point, if somebody gets arrested, I'm concerned anytime you can't see it, touch it, feel it, you know, understand where it moves, it's very hard to have confidence in it.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, Mr. Rich Reinhart from Jersey, not North Jersey, because you can lump those in with all the New Yorkers. You said North Jersey is like New York. Didn't you say that?
Yes, it is. In my opinion, my humble opinion. Yes.
So how far south are you then?
I'm probably 40 minutes from Jersey City.
So what exit?
That's on a no traffic day.
Okay. What exit?
100.
Okay. See, this right is how you know somebody's from Jersey. You don't have to say anything. I have to say what exit, you know, and they know exactly what you're talking about. What exit do you life off of?
Do I life off of?
That's what I had one guy from Jersey say. Yeah, what exit do you live off of? He said life off of, you know. Exit 32.
But you knew what he was talking about.
Knew what he was talking about. All you have to do is say what exit. And if you're from Jersey and you know it, it's how I knew you were authentic. That's how I knew you weren't getting a fake version of a Rich Reinhart.
Rich, it's been an honor having you on here, brother. Thank you very much for giving us your time. And
well, hey, I appreciate y'all having me.
Hey, look at that. Look at that. What have we accomplished today?
Let's end it by saying, well, Rich, hey, thanks very much. So I just tell everybody, ask them how you're doing, okay? So say, ask them how you're doing, okay?
Thanks, guys. Sorry for the technical glitches in the beginning.
I know, we're having fun. Don't go anywhere. Rich, Murph, hold on. Everybody else, stay tuned for the debrief. Hey, Well, apparently, when I said, how you doing, he did really well. He did, you know, how you doing? He's doing good. Rich, man, this is us saluting you. What a case. $4 billion. I mean.
Unbelievable. That's more money than Pablo Escobar had. Well, no, not really.
Not really. But, you know. But hey, but think about to your point, the marketing and stuff. These people could have made a killing in network marketing. They could have made a killing in, you know, being an investment, whatever it is, something that would make a lot of money and they wouldn't have mm-hmm. to look over their shoulder every day. But as you heard from him, there's a good chance maybe she's not with us anymore. You know, the billions may not have saved her.
Yeah, yeah, you're not kidding. And the fact that she hasn't been seen or heard from since, I mean, you can run and hide, but I'm not sure how long you can do that. $4 billion would probably help quite a bit. But still, she has ticked off a lot of people. So, you know.
Yeah, but and you also, with that much money, you're going to be tempted, in which she did and the other people did. They wanted to live a certain lifestyle. You're mm-hmm. not going to go live on some little hut in an island somewhere. Eventually, you're going to do like what happened with Whitey Bulger and his wife. He tried to keep their living style mm-hmm. low-key, but she had to go to the hair salon. She had to do stuff. You know, they caught her, you know, that way. So, no, I mean, this was what was fascinating, too? Remember working cases, you know, everybody's got this view of the IRS. Like I joked, it's a small nonprofit, mm-hmm. you know, organization. But if you wanted somebody from IRS on your team, you wanted a guy like Rich Reinhart, because, I mean, the dude, I mean, very deceptive, because you'd hear him talking, hey, how you doing? How you doing? You go, okay, you know, this guy's a financial whiz. Yeah, he's a financial whiz.
Yeah. Oh, he's squared away. Former DEA diversion investigator, too. So started out Border Patrol, right?
And yeah, what the fuck? I mean, it's
that's what I said when we did our intro, that this was very educational. I had no idea. When we started talking about penny stocks, I can't tell you how many pennies I lost in penny stocks trying to figure out how they work. Little did I know, it's a freaking scam.
Well, and let me tell you, too, I found just last part here. There's a little book I got here. It's called The Index Card. But it's really a guy was writing down some financial advice one time. He said, I could tell you everything you needed to know on a financial card. Basically, he said, never buy or sell individual stocks. The reason why? These people know the game better than you. Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely. And this is exactly, that's rule number four. Never buy or sell individual stocks.
And that's why they made mutual funds. Diversity. Yep.
Guess what? Rule number five, Murph, buy inexpensive, well-diversified indexed mutual funds and exchange-traded funds. You're absolutely right. And if you want to get the book, it's called The Index Card, Why Personal Finance Doesn't Have to Be Complicated, Helene Olin and Harold Pollack.
There you go. And but we got to know, what's rule number one?
Don't do math.
There you go. I bet he doesn't have that on his little index card.
Doesn't either. Yeah, he's a mathematician.
Yeah, so if you want to get our book, you know, it's Patreon. Join Patreon. We'll send you a index card.
Just go to DEA Narcos, DeanArcos.com if you want to get Murph's book. Just go there.
Oh, yeah. There
all right. Go. Well, hey, guys. Well, let's bring this to the close. So, hey, hopefully you guys enjoyed this as much as we did. It was a good time. We learned a lot, too. Go on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Hit those 5 stars. Leave us a comment on Spotify. You can actually do that now. Head on over to GameOfCrimesPodcast.com for more information about the show. Like I say, go check out Boyd's pictures. Mm-hmm. Stuff you won't see anywhere else, Murphy. I mean, you guys got some unique ones.
Yep.
Yeah, and then follow us on social media at Game of Crimes on Twitter, Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram, and also Patreon. Patreon, as you were saying, .com/Game of Crimes. That's patreon.com/Game of Crimes. That's 1-800-Patreon.com/Game of Crimes. Just, you know, it's where you need to be. That's where we put more content out on Patreon. Hours per month than we do here. So you got to go over and join it and see what it's all about. Everything from we do our Q&A, we do You Can't Make the Shit Up, 911, What's Your Emergency, Case of the Month, our Narco Meter Review, and our monthly bonus video for the Warden of the Throne people. So
yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. And listen, I tell you what, be sure if you enjoyed this week's episode, join us next week. A good friend of mine's coming on here. Who is it? Can't tell you. You have to join us next week.
Well, because Murph's going to have to figure out if he's actually got any friends, so he's got to pay one to come on.
Well, no, this guy, I think it's the other way around.
I don't think so.
I love you, brother.
And how you doing? Okay, how you doing? I'm doing good. So everybody, I hope you're doing well out there. And thank you once again for playing the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all. What exit do you life off again? Exit 32, Game of Crimes.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.